So, Stefan, you're the first to be interviewed. For people, just imagine the target group, people who have never ever heard about the Istanbul Protocol. Doctors, lawyers, with some sort of their personal experience. And we want them to feel motivated to enter the whole world of Istanbul Protocol. So how would you start explaining what it is? What is the Istanbul Protocol? It sounds very officially. What is it?
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me. I think the Istanbul Protocol can be summarized as follows. It's a very unique document. It's a unique document. It doesn't have any comparable document as in international law or international relations, because it brings together three different disciplines. It brings together the legal discipline with the international norms and standards on torture, why torture is prohibited, how it is prohibited, what torture is in the first place, what kind of mechanisms exist to deal with torture in a preventive way, in a repressive way. So that's one major part of the protocol. But then usually many international instruments are limited to legal rules and standards, and the Istanbul Protocol goes beyond that. It actually also documents very well what medical doctors can do, or medical personnel in general, if they are confronted with cases of torture, or if they think that a person has been the subject of torture. So it's well documented. There are actually drawings in the protocol also to help them indicate where people have been suffering, for example, in which parts of the body. And thirdly, which is even more exceptional, is that there is a psychological element to it. So psychologists will also find information about how to recognize trauma, traumatic experiences that people who have gone through torture have experienced, and in that sense they can recognize and try to help them in the short run, or to refer them to other professionals in the longer run. So by bringing those three elements together, I think the Istanbul Protocol is very unique, and unfortunately it's not very well known. Maybe because of that, because it's interdisciplinary and each field thinks that's a little bit for the other field, rather than assuming responsibility for one's own field and then also trying to establish a dialogue between the different fields.
The name Istanbul Protocol sounds very official, like an official treaty for governments and official places. Mm-hmm. What has been actually achieved by lawyers and doctors who used the Istanbul Protocol or who acted in accordance with that? What are the success story, let's say, the stories or achievements?
Oh, well, that's a very interesting question. It's always hard to exactly pinpoint what our success is and what our failures. And particularly lawyers and doctors tend to think, because something is documented on paper, that it's already changing in reality, which is, of course, not the case. Reality goes much beyond what our norms and standards would like to do or would like to confine us to. But basically what I think is among the successes of the Istanbul Protocol is the fact that professionals start talking to one another by the fact that they find particular elements of their discipline in that one document. They start understanding better why it is important, for example, for a doctor to document in a very specific way if a person has been tortured and how he or she has been tortured, because the doctor will then know, okay, if at the end of the day it needs to be fed into a legal procedure, then I have to do it this way and not that way. And likewise for lawyers, they will have to understand that documentation of torture takes place in specific ways, which may not always be very conclusive, which may not always be 100% right, but with likelihoods and percentages and chances. And so they have to understand what certain evidence means in a legal setting. So the very fact that they have these sources of information available in the Istanbul Protocol makes them talk to one another, which is a major achievement, because as we all know, professions tend to be very much inward-looking to one another, inside to each other, and hardly try to go beyond the borders of their own discipline. So I think this document actually provides a wonderful foundation to establish, you could say, a house with many chambers. And in those chambers, you will find all kinds of professionals. So it's like an interdisciplinary house, which is being constructed on the basis of the Istanbul Protocol. If you could call that a success, I think it could already figure. Another way of looking at success would possibly be how cases are then better, more adequately documented, and how cases of individual people who have been tortured are reaching courts and are convincing the judges that torture has taken place and that they can receive asylum, for example, or that the state from where they come, where the alleged torture has taken place, is being found in violation of its international obligations. And there are cases. In fact, the Istanbul Protocol started as a necessity because of the failure in the past to document cases in a proper way. So there are cases indeed where it can easily be demonstrated that due to the new techniques and the new approach of the Istanbul Protocol, people can be protected better.
Talking about torture and some unfair behavior in Europe, talking about that in Europe, for many people it's somehow related to asylum seekers. Do people working in this area know about the Istanbul Protocol? Has it been used widely in the asylum procedure?
Mm-hmm. Another very good question. My quick answer would be no, it has not really been used very extensively. And that has to do with the awareness. Many know the legal rules in their particular discipline, for example, pertaining to asylum and asylum law and asylum law in their own country. But this, of course, is a set of norms that goes much beyond that. It's a set of international norms and it's a set of interdisciplinary norms. So it's much more difficult, in fact, to gain access to the Istanbul Protocol. Not in a physical way, it's on the internet. Everyone can find it, can download it, can read it. But to take the mental space, in fact, to start digging into the details of the Istanbul Protocol and therefore to understand that certain parts may not belong to your discipline, but nevertheless are extremely important to gain a broader understanding of torture and torture prevention. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there, a lot of work of awareness raising, even with services and officers that are very professional and working in professional ways. And that's exactly one of the reasons why this project was actually set up, to raise the awareness and then also in a later stage to provide specific training. Training in one module or training in several modules, basic modules, advanced modules, and so on. In fact, already at this conference, we've been able to establish some links, in this case with Belgian agencies who are interested in finding out more and who have expressed an interest in fact, organizing an in-house training for them. And it is the asylum organization, the asylum office of this country that has expressed an interest. So it's really good, I think, that we have the conference, that this project is leading towards that kind of output. And in other words, we need to be able to continue the work.
One very pragmatic question, because not everybody attends conferences where you can convince them with your great presentations. Imagine you were a lawyer who knows nothing, or imagine you meet such people in a pub or at an event. How can the Istanbul Protocol be useful for the everyday practice of a lawyer? What makes the difference when they know and implement the Istanbul Protocol?
Mm-hmm. I think lawyers, to take the example, can benefit because they will first of all get a very wide overview of all the legal provisions dealing with torture. And there is no single document actually that does that. I mean, there are many documents that have legal rules and standards on torture, but they're all separate documents. So that's the first advantage of the protocol. It brings together all these norms. Obviously, it's a text of 1999. So in other words, there has been some progress, and particularly and some developments, particularly when it comes to individual cases that courts have been deciding. So if you take the Istanbul Protocol itself of 1999, you will find a set of rules of that period, obviously. And so it has to be read in conjunction or with an extension towards the period of today. That's one thing. The second is that lawyers may start understanding, hopefully they will, why it is important to talk to medical doctors and to psychologists. Because some professions have a tendency to think they're self-sufficient and that everything is cast in particular professional terms. Well, here you have an invitation, actually, to start looking beyond your own discipline and to start, to start understanding why a person, for example, who has been the subject of torture, is not willing to talk, is not willing to give a testimony before a court. And you wouldn't understand that unless you know about the psychological sequels of a torture case or a torture incident. And in other words, lawyers can also seek advice from others in order to have better testimonies, to have better evidence that with which they can go to court and hopefully have a better outcome for the case. So I would imagine even if lawyers don't know very well, they would immediately see the advantage to the extent that it will help their case forward. And that's why it's so important to raise the awareness about this protocol in general terms. Because it's true that not many lawyers, and the same with medical doctors, would actually know the text, although it's readily available on the internet. But, you know, there's so much on the internet these days that actually that becomes the major problem, where to select and how to select.
It's quite interesting to hear at all these conferences that interdisciplinary approach is an added value, but at the same time, there are always these small complaints, such as, oh, if only the doctors cooperated more with the lawyers. What would you say from your perspective that the doctors could do to make this interdisciplinary approach working? Work? And vice versa, what could you lawyers do for the doctors?
Yes, of course. I would say don't complain, just do it. Yeah. Sit together and start understanding what you're talking about. For example, in this conference, I would not be attending the legal workshop. I would be attending the workshop of a discipline that I know very little about, the medical one, because that is where I have something to learn. The legal one I'm very familiar with, and of course there are always like further details which you can pick up. But on the other hand, the possibility to learn a lot in the legal workshop for me as a lawyer is far less pronounced. So in this case, it would be far better to actually go to another discipline. And this is in fact what we try to do with the conference as well. The people broaden their horizon and go to something else to that a new world is opening up. So let's hope, at least at this conference, because it's for multipliers, they have to be sensitized to that and then take it back to their people, their networks, their circles, their organizations. So it's a little bit train-to-trainers concept, this one, although it's not a formal training, it's more an awareness-raising event, of course.
I'm just thinking, we have developed some materials for awareness raising and then also for trainers and trainees, but not everybody who has read the Istanbul Protocol can call himself a trainer. Mm-hmm. So if there are institutions who become sensitized and who want to organize some training for their professional organization, mm-hmm. how can they reach people who are actually trainers? Mm-hmm. If somebody asked you, what would you advise?
I would advise have a look at the website, because very soon after this project is coming to an end, the website will be opened, and on that website there will be a database with names of experts who can serve in individual cases, to document particular forms or examples of torture, but also experts who can give trainings, who can come, who are readily available, not probably within 24 hours, but nevertheless with some notice, and then who could do the training. And so whomever has a particular question or need or feels the necessity to go beyond the existing discipline or the existing knowledge, I think that will be a wonderful device, actually, to open up and to invite people to come. Again, the example of the Belgian agency is a good one, because now they start realizing there is a lot more to be done than, of course, a legal analysis of each individual case. So if this would work, it would be a nice example, together with the many examples that have already taken place in the context of this project in other countries as well.
The last question and the least formal question is, what is your most outstanding experience related to the IP, to the Istanbul Protocol? A story, a person who is intriguing for you, some experience.
That is a very difficult question. I'm not sure if I can give you really a story, but what I could give you is the sensation of the second meeting that we had. That meeting was in Brno, actually. And the sensation of coming to the conclusion, yes, I really have to learn a lot more about instances of torture than what I thought I mastered. I thought I had a fairly good understanding of what torture was as a phenomenon, of its societal consequences, of the legal standards, obviously. And all of a sudden, it was like an eye-opener in one of these sessions in that meeting, where I came to the conclusion, yeah, there is so much more to be learned. So it's not a very impressive story, maybe, to others. It may not be, something which you can conquer the world, but it's for me personally a very important experience to say and to realize on the psychological front and on the medical front there's a completely different world, and these disciplines also think in different ways. And we've had discussions in the project about how to reach the professionals. Lawyers like to read and to work and to elaborate long texts, and that's probably a good way for them. But medical doctors work in a very different way, and so we had some discussions and probably some tensions around that in the project. But it's a way of trying to understand. That's what really interdisciplinarity means. There's a lot of lip service being paid to interdisciplinarity. Usually, it comes down to being multidisciplinary, the disciplines one next to the other. This is, in my experience, the first real project where I sensed that idea of interdisciplinarity, where disciplines are talking to one another, or at least are open enough to realize that they have to talk to one another. And if only that could come out of this project and further on of other initiatives, that would be another sensation, I'm sure, for myself and hopefully for others as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.